Something unthinkable happened at Ashraf al-Khalid's wedding. An al-Qaeda suicide bomber walked into the reception and his bomb went off. 27 people died that day in November of 2005, including Mr. al-Khalid's father and his bride's father. Documentary filmmaker Jed Rothstein follows Ashraf al-Khalid on his self-appointed mission to speak out around the globe against the jihadist mentality in a new film called Killing in the Name. It's been nominated for an Oscar in the Best Documentary Short category, and I'm very pleased that it brings Jed Rothstein to our show today. Welcome.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me.
The first thing Mr. al-Khalid says in the film is that Muslims are to blame for radicalism because Muslims let these ideas grow and they didn't speak out about them. Did you find this statement at all surprising since Mr. al-Khalid is a Muslim? And do you think that he meant all Muslims, even the ones who would never imagine engaging in an act of violence?
Well, no, I don't think he meant certainly that all Muslims are to blame or even that most are to blame. I think what Ashraf is saying, and he says it in different ways throughout the film and in his life, I know he says it, is that the fact of violence and militancy within the Muslim community is something that's very hard for people to talk about, even though obviously it's a very, very small minority of people who actually support that, almost no one really. Most people in the Muslim community, just like everywhere else, want to just live their lives peacefully. But it's a conversation that up to now hasn't really taken place in any broad way. And what Ashraf is trying to do is start that conversation. And so what I think he's saying is the fact that we have a code of silence or that we can't discuss this problem within our community makes us all, not culpable is too strong of a word, but we're allowing it to continue by not having a frank discussion about it.
How did the two of you connect?
We connected through the executive producer of the film, actually, Carrie Lamack, who runs an organization that focuses on survivors of terrorist attacks. And she had originally wanted me to speak to a number of people in her organization. And I, doing some research upon meeting Ashraf, really was taken by his story. I just find him, he's so inspiring with his ability to have lived through this uniquely horrific event and to move to transform it into something so positive and to work completely without bitterness and work with really solely with hope for the future and hope for he has a beautiful 2 or now 3-year-old daughter. He works so that her life and the other children's lives when they grow up will hopefully not be plagued by terrorism. And I felt that the ability to kind of beat this sword of terrorism into this inspiring plow is a great story to follow. And so that's how I met him.
Well, he has a good personal reason for feeling that way. But what does he do to support himself while he's going out on this mission?
Well, Ashraf is, you know, he's tireless. He works full-time. He's a medical devices representative for an entire large region of the Middle East. And, in fact, when we were filming, he certainly, in the latter part of our filming, we really had to thread our trips in between his jobs and his pretty substantial amount of travel for his work. So he's part of the Global Survivors Organization, but as far as I know, they certainly don't pay him to do that. He does this out of his own heart and his own motivation and, at considerable strain to his life.
Is there an exact figure as to how many people die each year as a result of suicide bombings?
I don't. There may be. Those numbers are hard to come by. I think we were able to come up with a cumulative number for some number of years, which is escaping me right now. But I think it must vary from year to year. But it's a large number.
And you make the point early in your film. You make the point early in your film that although the stated targets are often Westerners, most of the victims of these terrorist acts are other Muslims. Are they just collateral damage or are they intended targets?
Well, I think if you look around where the attacks are taking place, they're often taking place within the Muslim world. Certainly for several years in Iraq, the number of attacks was extraordinarily high, and that was almost all Muslims. People in markets, women, children. In Pakistan, it's the same thing.
Sunnis targeting Shiites and Shiites targeting Sunnis.
Correct, correct.
But who was the intended target of the bomber that we're talking about here at the al-Khalid wedding?
Well, in the film, we interview a man who works as a recruiter for the organization that carried out the bombings that hit Ashraf's wedding. And he claims that they were trying to attack intelligence targets, I think, in the hotel. But
at a wedding.
Exactly. I mean, first of all, a hotel is a soft target. The walls and the doors are not secured. It's just sheetrock. A bomb blows through them. So going in there to carry out a bombing like this, even if you were aiming for a particular person, you would necessarily have an enormous amount of collateral damage because you're in a crowded hotel lobby. But I also, the film for me is really about Ashraf's ability to start a conversation that isn't taking place, to be this first man to stand up and say, something is wrong and we have to face the truth and talk about it, much in the same way that people, you know, one man in Tunisia stood up and said, something is wrong in this country. I'm going to take a drastic measure to stop business as usual. And I think it takes really this one person to ignite change. I didn't want to get too deeply into the forensics of counterterrorism or into testing the veracity of what the terrorists had said to us about their claims, because I think they say a lot of things. And if I had wanted to explore whether Zaid, who's the Al-Qaeda in Iraq recruiter in the film, was telling me the truth, I feel like I would have had to have done due diligence and spoken to a number of counterterrorism people. And that wasn't really the focus of my story. But their claim essentially is that it was a mistake, that they weren't trying to kill Ashraf or his family.
The film is called Killing in the Name. It's been nominated for an Oscar. And it can be seen at the IFC Film Center on 6th Avenue. It also will be shown Sunday at the Paley Center for Media at 25 West 52nd Street at 12:45. For more information on all the screenings, you can go to our show page at WMIC.org. I'm talking with the filmmaker, Jed Rothstein, and I am Leonard LePate. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. Well, let's talk a bit more about Zaid. How did you get him to speak to you, and how did you get him to speak to you on camera without his face being obscured?
Well, was not easy. I have a great crew. In particular, I have a fantastic fixer, a local production coordinator and journalist Jordan, who works within that world, is connected to various figures in that world, and also was connected, I think, or at least had her ear to the ground of the security services, so that they could tell her, who we could meet with without risking their clamping down on us or risking people actually harming us. So there was certainly some risk involved in it. I think for Zaid and for people like him, they believe very strongly in what they're doing. And if they believe, as I think Zaid did, that he would get the chance to speak his piece clearly without my misrepresenting it, then they're happy to share their story. And I think I've found this across many, many films. You know, you're always trying to go into a closed community, or you're always trying to show people a side of things that they don't normally see. So you're always faced with this question that you ask, which is why would so-and-so want to be in the film? And basically, I think if you can approach people on the basis of allowing them to get a fair shake, no matter how crazy their ideas are, many people want to express themselves.
Because they're very sure of the rightness of what they have done. What message did he send to Ashraf to explain what had gone on? And do you think that that he honestly expected Ashraf to be comforted by what he said?
Well, you know, one thing, he would not meet with Ashraf personally, though I asked him to. The rest of the film is really Ashraf meeting various people, and Zaid refused. But he did agree to let me interview him and ask questions on Ashraf's behalf, which is what happened. He starts out by essentially apologizing to Ashraf, saying, we were not trying to kill your family. However, they're martyrs in heaven, so you should be thankful. Zaid's other message, which I thought was interesting, was essentially to the West in general, saying, you know, if you want to leave the Muslim world, then we can start talking about having a peace treaty effectively. If you come over here and you're in Iraq and you're here and you're there, meaning the West, then this is the only choice that we have. This is the only strategic means that we have to fight you, and we will fight you to the death, essentially.
Does Zaid, who trains people for suicide attacks, eventually plan to become a suicide bomber, or is his role simply to send others off to kill themselves?
No, he's definitely going to do it himself. In fact, we asked him at one point, I said, why wouldn't you just kill us? I mean, there were myself and my crew in this room. And he said, well, first of all, you know, that would be a waste. There's only four of you here, and I wouldn't waste myself on you. But his feeling was that he had been in and out of jail, and he'd been under heavy surveillance by the Jordanian security services. And his feeling was that as soon as he was able to cross the border, when the security services weren't paying as much attention to him, he was planning to go and become and martyr himself in Iraq or somewhere else. I'm certain that he will do that. Or I'm not certain, but I would imagine that he will try to do that.
Now, you mentioned Nasser Abbas, a man who at one time was one of the most wanted jihadists in Southeast Asia, who has turned and now tries to de-radicalize terrorists. You filmed a terrorist involved in the Bali bombings of 2000.
Yeah.
Another guy who I'm surprised to have seen on the film. All of these people seem to be hard to shake in their beliefs. Ashraf talks to a group of young Indonesian members of a terrorist group about what the Quran says about violence.
Young Indonesian members in a madrasa who are certainly sympathetic to jihadist aims. I wouldn't call them, I think to call them terrorists would be a stretch.
Okay, but they would be potential terrorists.
Correct.
They listen to him patiently, but it's obvious nothing he says will change their minds about the rightness of their cause.
Well, I think, Leonard, I mean, you and I both at one point were 16-year-old boys, which is about how old these kids were in the madrasa. And I think when, remembering back to that time myself, there's almost nothing that an adult could have told me, certainly not in the presence of 8 or 10 of my peers, that would have had any of us react by saying, oh, you're totally right. This stupid thing that we're doing or this stupid way that we think the world works is totally wrong, and you, adult, are completely right, and we're going to change our tune right now. Because I don't think 16-year-old boys are wired to react that way, and they didn't react that way. Some of them listened patiently. Some of them kind of snickered at him. But I think that something that he said will sink in somewhere, and that somewhere down the line in a few years when they have other, perhaps more important choices to make about how they live their lives and what they do, they will have at least been exposed to this man. And he, Ashraf, also brought a video testimony of a widow whose husband had been killed in the Bali bombing, who he visited with and who he tried to get to come to the madrasa with him, but she was too scared, but her testimony as well. And I think I think these sort of things stick with people in ways that they may not understand right now. You know, it would have been great for the film if the kids had this dramatic turnaround and on camera said, oh, you're so right, we're so wrong, we're in this isolated madrasa and we thought the world was like this, but it's actually totally different. Thank you, Ashraf. But in fact, you know, that didn't happen, and I don't think Ashraf or I thought that would happen. But I feel like, again, it's this one person, this is true throughout history, and it's been profoundly true in these last weeks, for me, in a very moving way, where it just takes one person to stand up and break the wall of fear, the wall of silence, and all of a sudden you see that when the righteousness of their cause is clear, that other people will follow. And I think that Ashraf is so fearless and so inspiring. I mean, Ashraf would have gone absolutely anywhere. I limited the scope of the film partly because of the length of time in which we had to tell the story, and partly because I'm frankly not as fearless as Ashraf. There's some places he goes and will go to take his message that are, you know, maybe even a little too scary for me.
Who was targeted in the Bali bombing?
Tourists, specifically tourists. It happened to be mostly Australians. In Bali, Bali is a big tourism spot for Australians.
But weren't many Muslims killed?
Many Muslims were killed as well, and this is always Ashraf's point. You know, the film has gotten some criticism because some people felt that Ashraf is speaking to Muslims and saying, well, you killed other Muslims, you can't kill other Muslims, this is against Islam. And that's really not what Ashraf is doing. I think he engages some very hardened people in the context in which they're comfortable talking, which is, does the Quran permit you to kill innocent people, and specifically Muslims? But he always makes the point that I think he starts when he's with some of these hardened folks of making the point that a lot of Muslims are killed too, and that resonates more with them. But of course, for Ashraf, nonviolence is the way, and really no one, Muslim or of any stripe, should be killed. And he says this at different points in the film, but I think people have sometimes come away thinking that, oh, well, if non-Muslims are killed, it's okay. And I just want to point out that Ashraf is not, that's not how he feels about it.
How much jail time did the terrorist you spoke to who was involved with the Bali bombings actually serve?
Oh, it's amazing, Leonard. He was, I think he served 5 or 6 years. And there were some technicalities within the Indonesian legal system that caused, I think he was originally sentenced to 8 or 10 years and then was let out after 5 because of some appeals process. You know, when you're in Indonesia, it's a beautiful country, but if you're any airplane that you're on, they make an announcement that any drugs found on anyone will be punishable by, you know, with the threat of death. I mean, I'm sure there are people who've traveled there with a small bag of marijuana and been locked up for ages and ages. And yet Idris, who was a critical member of this team that killed 200 people in the Bali bombings, and he was also involved in another bombing in the Marriott, did 5 years and is out living in Jakarta and is pretty much unrepentant.
Well, good luck with the Oscar.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations for being nominated.
Thank you.
Jed Rothstein, his film, Killing in the Name, it's now at the IFC Film Center on 6th Avenue and will also be shown Sunday at the Paley Center for Media at 25 West 52nd Street. That's at 1245. For more information, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org.